This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial, Tax and Accounting Services, and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Robin Dow is producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're visiting with Ray Strother, the fabled political consultant in so many halls of fame that too numerous to count. And he is joining us from his perch in Bozeman, Montana. And like many in America, he has been riveted to the 1-6 commission hearings. Last night, another one in prime time. And Liz Cheney, of course, the Republican, one of two on the panel, continues to be a major player in this investigation. And last night it was focusing in on the president's lack of action, the former president, Donald John Trump. As rioters took aim at the Capitol and were trying to kill Mike Pence and Nancy Pelosi, the president of the United States did nothing. Ray Strother, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Nice to hear your voice. And Ray is one of the most heroic and gallant people I know. And he has been counted dead so many times, I can't count them. But you can hear his voice is strong and he is still with it. And my guess is that you were watching last night.
I haven't missed a minute of any of it. I find it fascinating, riveting, and incredibly sad and frightening.
Is there anything that really is that surprising, though?
No, it's like we knew it all, but it's been put in order for us. You know, we have people, little snippets of this and that, the misdeeds by Trump and the administration. But just put it all in perspective. The other thing that's remarkable about this is this isn't some left-wing group condemning Trump. He's been condemned by his own actions, by his own people, his cabinet members, his friends, his family, everybody but Rudy Giuliani and a couple more. And it's them. I mean, they were frightened for their country. And that's remarkable to me. Not remarkable that people be frightened for their country, but remarkable that all the evidence that we've heard from these hearings comes out of Trump's own mouth or his own people. Astonishing.
But yet, the former president has told his flock, and as we know, a lot of people did vote for him last time, more than anybody in the history of our country other than Joe Biden. And he's told his flock that the election was stolen, and many of them are still buying into this nonsense. And in Louisiana, as in many other states where Trump won handily, the delegation that represents us, all but two of them, have yet to say that Joe Biden was elected president of the United States in a fair election. Ray, it is amazing that we have come to this.
Well, I've seen such an evolution in what we can call politics. I don't know if this is called politics or terrorism, but such an evolution. This is not a thing that happened in my career. I was in politics for 50 years doing campaigns, and I was always pretty proud. I ran into some stinkers. I ran into some people who shouldn't have run. I know that. And I helped some people who shouldn't have been in office. But as a whole, it was a group of honorable people who cared about the country and took the oath of office very seriously. You know, I can go through a list of people that stand above the crowd. But now, we're not surprised. No, we're not surprised. We're used to our level of democracy, our level of discourse falling to the ground. No, there's still a lot of people who support Trump. About, 40% of America or, you know, something like that, or 80% of Republicans, I don't know.
Yeah, and those are numbers, and that's a lot of people. And here's a guy who lost the overall vote twice and yet won one election. And won handily in the Electoral College, even though he lost by 3 million votes to Hillary Clinton, right at 3 million. Then he lost by 7 million the last time. By the way, for those who say this election was different because of COVID and mail-in ballots, Trump has yet to acknowledge that he lost the overall vote to Hillary Clinton when we didn't have these mail-in issues. He will not admit when he gets his butt whipped. He's the quintessential bully, A guy who's all talk, as someone would say, all hat, no cattle. He's not a tough guy, although he masquerades as one. And Ray, many people latch on to that, and they like what he says enough that, and they like his lifestyle, that they really want to be like him. They want to be like him, and particularly in the South. And these people who drive trucks and work hard jobs and make an honest living, who go to these rallies and wear their MAGA hats, these are not the kind of people that Donald Trump would associate with. He wouldn't have them over to Trump Tower for drinks, Ray?
No. I have family members who support Trump. And the only thing is, you can ask, and they can't really tell you. They say something vague, like, he tells it like it is. I'll say, well, what is it? Explain it to me. I can't understand it. It's beyond my understanding. In fact, I wouldn't know how to communicate if I were working for this guy. I can't think of anything good you could say. Could pro-law enforcement? No, you can't be pro-law enforcement if you try to overthrow the government of the United States. Integrity? No. Morality? No. Give me a reason to support Donald Trump. I don't get it.
Well, it's all about vilifying the other side. And Democrats have done this as well. That we have talked about how when you went to Washington, there were a handful of political consultants, and now there are thousands of them. And when you run campaigns, tell me if I'm wrong, more often than not, it's about attacking the other side than disclosing any kind of virtuous aspects of your own candidate. Is that fair?
Well, I'm not going to say it's about attacking the other side. It's about presenting your views and exposing your opponent.
So, yeah. And one of your candidates, who I happen to like a lot, he was the king of negative campaigning. His name was Bill Clinton. He always wanted to go negative, didn't he?
Oh, that was his favorite. You know, as a matter of fact, he didn't think I was negative enough. And there was a local guy in Little Rock. He would bring in, after I left, I'd spend, you know, days in Little Rock filming commercials and all. And after I left, he would have this guy come in, and they would, the two of them, do negative commercials. And some TV station would call me and say, I didn't know you'd go negative. I said, hell, I didn't either.
But it worked enough that he won all but one race when he ran for governor, and that's when he hired you, when he lost to Frank White. Isn't that when he brought in Ray Strother?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And he won.
And I'm not being critical. I like Clinton, and I think he's one of the brightest human beings I've ever met. An incredible intellect. And he made me laugh a lot. So I don't dislike Clinton. I think he was all in all a good president too. But, He still wouldn't have turned his country over to a mob.
No, and the listener notes that Clinton and his wife both answered subpoenas when they were asked to testify before legal authorities, including the Congress. How many hours was Hillary on the hot seat for Benghazi? I think it was 19. And yet Trump has not done so. He basically just thumbs his nose at the government.
Well, he has problems with the truth. And when you start testifying under oath, if you don't tell the truth, you're in big trouble. And he knows probably that he is incapable of telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. Now, on this 1-6 committee commission, we interviewed Garrett Graves a few months ago, the congressman from Baton Rouge, and he said it wasn't fair because there weren't other Republicans on the panel. Republicans that were recommended by Kevin McCarthy, including the guy from Ohio, Jim Jordan, who was part of the investigation. But I have a feeling that if Garrett Graves had been invited, he wouldn't have participated. But Liz Cheney is doing so in a huge way and perhaps surrendering her political future in Wyoming. Your observations about her conduct during this investigation?
Well, it's really interesting. She is so polar opposite me politically on issues, not emotions, but issues. I have a new perspective about her and her father. You know, she comes out of a family that was anti-Trump to start with. The Bushes were never pro-Trump. They were pretty much anti-Trump. And she has taken great courage to do what she's done and will probably, I would think, be defeated. It's going to be hard for her to get elected in Wyoming again with so many Trump voters there. But she's a person that has shown great integrity, great courage, and I expect to see her around for a long time, some place. I do not know where. She may end up running for president this time. But I think she's become a rather heroic figure. And maybe heroic enough that people in Wyoming will wake up and say, huh, maybe we should bring her back.
877, we do have to take a break, Roy. And we Ray Strother is with us. With Ray Strother, 877-217-5757. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ray Strother, the celebrated political consultant who handled the likes of Bill Clinton and Albert Gore and Lloyd Benson. You can go down the list. Any Democrat who was part of the national political process for a couple of generations probably had Ray Strother in their camp at one time providing advice, and he does it well, and he is still in the game in a different way at his home in Montana. And last night he was observing the 1-6 committee's latest hearing, and this one was in prime time, and we learned there will be more to come in September. David Falkenflik of NPR sends this: for more than 3 hours, then-President Trump took no public actions to halt an insurrection as people laid siege to the U.S. Capitol to block certification of President Biden's win. Trump did not call out the National Guard. He did not stride to the East Room for a live address. He did not tweet out denunciations of the assault on the seat of the nation's legislative branch. Instead, two mild tweets called for peaceful actions were sent from his account, the first an hour after protesters overwhelmed police at the base of the Capitol. And the sitting president did one other thing, according to Congressman Adam Kinziger. Trump watched television. The Illinois representative, who, like Trump, is a Republican, was one of two lawmakers leading last night's hearing of the House committee investigating the January 6th attack of last year. Kinziger says the panel has filled in the blanks of what Trump did during 3 hours and 7 minutes of inaction. Kinziger's colleagues have called the refusal to act a dereliction of duty. So Donald Trump is being whipped, but he says this is fake news. And Fox News, I understand, did not carry the committee hearing last night, Ray Strother.
I didn't know. I didn't. Somehow my television doesn't pick up Fox, so I have no idea. some person programmed it, so it just doesn't exist on my television. I don't know why.
You know, I'm in an office building here now owned by Investar Bank and John D'Angelo, who's a very good landlord. But before that, it was owned by a gentleman, and he had Fox News on all the television stations, which were all over the lobby. And, you know, they would have voting right here in our lobby with Fox News going on. And I remember when Mary Landrieu was running against Bill Cassidy, there was Fox News just pounding away at Mary Landrieu as people were waiting in line to go to the polls.
And oh, my God. I had no idea.
Yeah, well, that obviously was against the law. But that was not a close race. So Mary Landrieu didn't go around saying voter fraud, voter fraud, voter fraud. Otherwise, she would have sounded like somebody else. Henry at the Country Club. Henry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Morning, Mr. Ray. I still recommend following up to friends of mine that want to learn a little bit about politics. It's a great book. I got a question. Now, Mr. Ray, you're a hell of a PR guy. What if you were handling Josh Hawley's next campaign? How would you do it, considering last night?
Well, Josh Hawley didn't come out well last night to me and to people like me, but he may have reinforced himself with his core constituency. This country is now so polarized, I think he was playing the rabble. Remember, this is the most interesting man, Hawley. He's a Yale Stanford graduate, law school graduate, Ivy League all the way. And he seems unhinged, but I don't know that he's unhinged. I don't know if he's just not politically wise and wanting to hang on to a seat that he shouldn't have had to start with. Mr. Hawley is one of the more puzzling politicians in Washington, I think. How would I represent him? I wouldn't. I wouldn't even think about it.
And he is represented by Timmy Teeple, who handled Bobby Jindal's campaigns. Timmy lives in Baton Rouge, and from a victory perspective, Timmy's doing a very good job. Ray in Prairieville. Ray, you're on with the other Ray, Ray Strother.
Thanks for taking the call, Jim. A question is actually for both of you. It sounds like we're a little bit on the anti-Trump talk, and I'm just curious who we think would be the best person to represent the lead of the Republican Party, not the Democratic Party, in the next campaign. And I'll take my answer on the air. Thank you.
All right. I think the question is not who will, but who would be the best. And I'm sure you have some thoughts about that, Ray Strother.
Yeah, I no longer know. It's strange. I would have thought that Donald Trump would not even be a consideration. It would just be a joke when he won. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably not the right person to ask. As a matter of fact, if I said that Liz Cheney would be the perfect candidate, it would be a mark against her, because whoever I would like, or whoever not like, but whoever would be passable with me would not be with the right wing of the Republican Party, which you have to get elected. So my selecting the candidate, I'll go for Liz Cheney.
She
couldn't get the nomination.
Well, I remember in one of your many appearances with us, you said politics is a chain, and the chain is affected by what comes before it. And
that's right.
10 years ago, I thought the Republican Party had a great ticket, and it was a relatively close race. It was 5 million votes, but Obama pulled away in the last week. But Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, think of that ticket. That's a good ticket. And in 10 years, the Republican Party went from two people who I think are good Americans, who are not going to embarrass the country or themselves, and look what we got.
Well, except for Sarah Palin, John McCain was.
Yeah, of course, Romney and Ryan came in the election after Sarah Palin, and I don't know what McCain was thinking, but it was. And he even admitted it. It was a stupid move on his part, and it cost him dearly against Barack Obama in 2008. But Romney and Ryan, if that ticket were in place, they would win the election. But I don't think Mitt Romney's certainly not going to get the Republican nomination again. He may have trouble holding on to his seat in Arizona, or excuse me, in Utah.
Utah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. It's Romney. If we find Romney reasonable, he's not a good Republican candidate. No.
Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Kevin, you're on.
Yes, sir. I have two questions. Who are the people? Why nobody don't talk about the people who are voting for these people who are voting and not in their own best interest? And why we have, and with the abortion law, why we have more commercials and everything about adopt a pit before we have commercials about adopt a child?
Adopting a pit bull? Kevin's got a point. And people do vote against their best interests. Certainly people who are at the lower end of the economic ladder, who are white, are voting against their best interest. If they vote for a candidate who doesn't even want to raise the $7.25 minimum wage, but in Louisiana, the legislature won't raise it, and we're not alone. Even in places like Georgia, it's still $7.25. Ray, basically in the South in particular, and to some extent in other parts of the country, the Democratic Party has lost the white working man and woman.
Yes, we have. We absolutely have. And I think we're partly responsible for that. We overlooked them. We got a little too elitist for them. And we no longer spoke their language. And people can point to all sorts of things like prayer in schools and all, but that's not it. It's a cultural misfit. We've alienated, we Democrats have alienated ourselves from a lot of people simply by our superiority and smugness. We're partially to blame.
I don't know that I've ever heard it put better than that, but that's exactly where we are. And that goes back to what I was saying, is that a lot of these white working class people, men in particular, men in the South, they like Donald Trump because they'd like to be Donald Trump. And we'll be back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robert Dow producing. And we're spending another segment with Ray Strother, the fabled political consultant who logged his career in Louisiana, was once editor of the LSU Reveille, and now is based in Bozeman, Montana. But he's following the world at large, as are we, and he was riveted to the 1-6 committee's meeting last night, and we're talking about it with him. So if you got something on your mind that's pertinent to Ray's world, 877-217-5757. Barry in Mid-City. Hello, Barry.
Good morning. Thank you, Jim. I'd like to ask Ray about the Democratic Party today as opposed to, let's say, during President Clinton's time when he, in my view, brought the party back to the middle, so to speak. And what happened that it's now so far to the left, please?
Well, I don't know that it's that far to the left, to be honest with you. There is a left segment, but there's always been a leftist segment in the party. It's not anything new or strange. And Clinton purposefully wanted to bring the party back to the middle. He actually stated that time and time again. We're not right, we're not left, we're the center. I think Al Gore had a great expression. He said he was of the radical center. I don't know if we're a more leftist party now or not. I really don't know. We don't have a lot of our working class voters anymore. They're gone. So a lot of our moderates have left the party or vote the other way right now. So, I don't know. The party has moved a little to the left, but it'll come back. That's just the nature of the beast.
Bill Huey writes, ask Ray if he thinks the old heads in the Democratic Party should step aside so Democrats can find a new candidate for 2024. Is Biden the guy to run again?
Gosh, I hate to be put on the spot like this, but is he? I'm not sure he is. I'm not sure he is. And I'm not sure his vice president is either, to be quite honest with you. I'd like to see at least let's have a choice of a Democratic Party nominee. And I think we have some pretty good people out there ready to run. I won't go into names, but there's some pretty good people out there. But I don't know. Judge Biden. Biden, who I respect and like very much. I did some work for him one time. He's one of the straightest men I've ever known in my life. A very principled person, and you have to like him. On the Delaware campus, students follow him around like he were the Pied Piper. They like him so much. He has an institute there at the University of Delaware. But I don't know that his age won't disqualify him. He's younger than I am, but I feel disqualified, so maybe he will, too.
Rebel in Sherwood. Hello, Rebel.
Hi. Thank you, Jim. And Mr. Schiller, thank you. I just get concerned about hearing all these massive false equivalencies that it's all of both sides-ism, and I just could not disagree with that more. We're talking about, I mean, we see it once again proved positive of how extreme the Republican Party has become, that they would allow this, you know, maniac, homicidal, narcissistic, sociopath, wannabe dictator to just do what he has done to the government and the country. So, I mean, I agree with you, sir, that too far left is ridiculous. Joe Biden couldn't be more center. I would call him almost center right in some cases. Do you really think that the Democratic Party is too far left? What measure are you using for that?
I'm not going to say we're too far left. It's just that the divide between the Republicans and Democrats is now wider than it's ever been. And it's very hard to accomplish anything in a Congress with no compromisers. It's very difficult. I've told this story many times about Russell Long, but Russell Long and Bob Dole, political opposites, sat on the Finance Committee together, but always came up with a handshake at the end and always did their work together and move the nation forward. I'd like to see more of that.
And in the former president's case, it's more of a question of criminality than it is political ideology. It appears, based on the evidence, that he did some things that would put others in jail. And the former president has done so with impunity. And he has people like Steve Scalise and Garrett Graves and Clay Higgins and Julia Letlow and Mike Johnson and John Kennedy who will not have the brass to take him on. They know, every one of those guys and one woman, they know that he acted inappropriately, that they know that Biden won the election, but, Ray, they won't say it.
Well, they're afraid of their electorate. They lack courage. That's the big thing. They just lack courage. And I don't think there's any doubt. I've listened to all the hearings, and that's a great thing about modern communications. I used to think I was on the inside in Washington. You don't have to be in Washington anymore to be on the inside. You can turn on your television set. There's plenty of information around there. But one thing I noticed, one thing I learned from the hearings was that Trump sent some tweets out, and he finally gave a television appearance. But all of those were forced. He didn't want to do any of it. And his family, his friends, his cabinet, his associates, other senators, they all encouraged him to call off the dogs, to stop the riot. And he had to be really persuaded to do something that should have been self-evident. He did not want to issue those statements. And they're lukewarm. You can tell he didn't like to issue those statements. That's what I learned. Is that, yeah, he did some things at the end, but he was forced to. Even his daughter helped force him to do it. So he doesn't deserve much praise. The truth is he should be in jail.
Well, he called Mike Pence a wimp and used the P word. But Pence, whether you like his politics or not, he stood tall that day. And he stayed when others were telling him to leave. I think Pence was the one who showed some courage, not Trump.
Oh, he's a bigger man. There's no question about that. Pence is a much bigger man than Trump. He proved it. You know, you never know what you are or who they are until they're put under pressure. And under pressure, Pence, like Cheney, acted very well.
Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on with Ray Strother.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Strother and Jim. Mr. Strother, I'd like to ask you, what would you think of if Tony Spell, a.k.a. Elmer Gantry, ran against John Kennedy, a.k.a. Foghorn Leghorn?
All right. John Kennedy, of course, is qualified to run for re-election. Qualifying ends today. There was speculation a few weeks ago, and I was part of that speculation that Tony Spell would get in, and he was considering it, but I hear he is unlikely to get in. But John Kennedy, it would seem, would not want a challenge from the right, and right now he can basically take the right flank, which is a big portion of the electorate in Louisiana, and not worry about being challenged from each side, right and left, Ray.
Yeah, I didn't realize today was qualifying or is even close, to tell you the truth. I don't think Kennedy will have any trouble getting reelected. Who's his opponent?
Well, you've got Luke Mixon, who's a very good candidate, a fighter pilot, from Bunkie, a moderate Democrat. He's in the John Bel Edwards mode, but he's got $1 million. And then there's Gary Chambers, a more flamboyant leftist, a minority, who's run a few times for office without success, who's also got about $1 million. And then Kennedy's got $28 million, Ray.
Yeah, that's right. A poverty candidate.
And he's got the power of the incumbency, and he's got a conservative electorate. So, you know what? Surprise, surprise. At least he said it. He says, I'm not going to debate. And you know what? If I were advising him, I might. Well, I tell you what, I would advise him to debate, because even if he debated, he would win. But I know how you guys think. It's like, what do you have to gain by a debate? And he's not going to.
Yeah, debates can be a trap. There's always one remark that'll throw your campaign away. So I can understand people saying, don't debate. Now, if you were a leading contender late in the campaign, you don't have any choice. You have to debate, or you'll also get defeated. So people won't tolerate that if you're a coward.
David in Atlanta. David, please be brief. You're on with Ray.
Mr. Struthers, if Liz Cheney didn't rule out running for president on one of the recent Sunday morning talk shows, if Trump were the nominee of the Republican Party for president, and if she ran as an independent, would that possibly throw the election to the House, or would it hurt Trump more or the Democratic nominee more?
That's a good question.
Oh, it would hurt Trump, because he probably has a few moderate Republicans left. I think they would be gone. They would go to Cheney. Also, it would hurt him with independents. It would not be a thing he would like to see, and she could do it, I think.
Well, and another prospect would be somebody like DeSantis getting the Republican nomination and Trump being upset about it and running as an independent, and the Democrats would love that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt tried that one time, you know.
Yeah, it didn't work out well for him either, but
it didn't work out well, and he was immensely popular.
He was. And you know what? He got shot, and he kept giving a speech after he was shot. How many presidents would do that today? I don't think they would be allowed to if they wanted to.
Oh, no. The Secret Service rules all. I found that an interesting story about Trump trying to take over the car from the Secret Service. My experience with the Secret Service is they have their own mind. And they're in charge. Once you get outside the White House, they are in charge.
Well, Ray Strother, always a pleasure. Let's keep talking, and best of luck to you and Sandy as Ray Strother continues a courageous and heroic battle against cancer. Thank you, my friend. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us. And we turn the page, and we have in studio Jan Rischer, features editor for The Advocate. She came to Baton Rouge and started writing in the newspaper on a frequent basis on January 14th. She is from Mississippi, has spent much of her life in the South, but has covered hurricanes, the Iraq War, and she knows Louisiana, many years in Lafayette. 877-217-5757. And a few weeks ago, she wrote a feature about yours truly. We went to DiGiulio's, and I got a lot of response from that. So I got the Jan Rischer treatment, and thank you for a wonderful feature. I was quite honored. Thank you.
It was so much fun. It was just an honor to have lunch with you.
Well, and likewise. And you had lunch recently with the mayor.
I did.
How was that?
That was exciting. We had some serious excitement during our lunch. We sat down. 3 minutes in, I heard something off to my left. Didn't sound quite right. Waited another second, and then I heard like a chair fall. And I looked, and a man was in serious distress.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't know if he was choking or what. And so I jumped up to run. And I didn't write this in the column, but I will tell you, I yelled to the mayor, call 911. And she did. And anyway, he's okay, but it was touch and go there for a while.
Yeah, that's always a disconcerting thing, and it happens in restaurants on occasion. Mm-hmm. I've seen it happen a few times, and when you talked with me, I mentioned Julio's, the late, great Richard Cole, co-owner, along with Mike Johnson. He died there on January 24th, And after he had died, they were kind enough to serve me my chicken piccata over Richard's dead body. But and I say this because Richard would absolutely love it. But I miss that man. And on August 23rd, he would have been 75 years old. He fought heart disease for about 40 years, and he did it well, much to the success of his cardiologist, one Carl Lucard. But Jan is covering people of interest, and the first focus was appropriately none other than Smiley Gray Anders Jr. And where did you go to lunch with Smiley?
Well, of course, we went to Pastime. So that's, you know, where you go when you go to lunch with Smiley, I think. It was what a treat.
Yeah, and Smiley is a venerable fellow. He'll be 85 on November 20th, and his column a few weeks ago, well, it actually a month ago now, a month and a half ago, June 4th, became 43 years old. And he, like you, you know, he said, I started this thing and it might be 6 months, and then boom, 43 and a half years later, he's still doing it. I have a feeling you're going to be here a while.
I hope so. You know, I really, really am enjoying Baton Rouge. I was in Lafayette longer than I've ever lived anywhere, but Baton Rouge is suiting me just fine. I love learning a new place. I love going places I've never been before. It's an adventure when I go down a street I've never been before. So that's really fun for me, and my husband enjoys it too.
Well, Jan writes about a few different things, including people, and most recently, along with Miracle Lewis, I see a story about expensive homes in Baton Rouge. And according to Jan and Miracle, the number one most expensive home in Baton Rouge, it costs how much if you want it?
I believe it was $14
million. $14 million. Five bedrooms, four garages, and 12 and a half acres, and it is a beautiful home. But $14 million, now in California, that'd be no big deal. But in Baton Rouge, it is. But it is amazing. I remember my friend Daryl Davis, when he got in the real estate business, this is probably close to 20 years ago, he said there were like three homes in Baton Rouge that year that sold for more than $1 million, and now there are probably three a week that sell for more than $1 million.
It's an interesting story, and I believe for that home, if you put 20% down, your monthly payment is only $77,000 a month.
Only $77,000 a month. You know, you can't pay for that on $7.25 minimum wage.
That would be tough.
But it's nice to have somebody who looks at the world in a way that you do, because I was looking in the New York Times yesterday, and this was in their style section: mass shootings, monkeypox, inflation, Roe v. Wade's overturning, adding years of pandemic stress. Already we have been down in the dumps, and now we have a few other things to get us more down in the dumps. We need every now and then to look at the world with a wink and a smile.
Absolutely. You know, when I was listening to your previous segment, you mentioned courage. My Facebook profile or cover picture is a quote from Millicent Garrett Fawcett that says, courage calls to courage everywhere. And I just think that's such a beautiful concept. And I believe it. You know, for example, I'm not going to go into the politics part of things, but but courage calls to courage everywhere. I'll leave with that. And I enjoy finding the good things. I have a thing that I post often on Facebook, tell me something good. And it's amazing, all the good things. And of course, I'm not a Pollyanna who doesn't understand the negative or doesn't have a cynical, I have cynicalness, cynicism, I suppose would be the right word. But I like looking for the positive.
877-217-5757 for Jan Risher. You lived in Lafayette how long?
20 years.
What are the distinctions between Lafayette and Baton Rouge?
There are many. There are many. It's, I think, just the sheer size difference makes it very different. I think both places have some things in common. Also, you know, people tend to stay. And when I first moved to Lafayette, it was right after 9/11, and it was difficult to meet people. And I've moved a lot. I've lived in three countries and six states, and I don't mind going someplace new, but it was difficult to get to know people because everyone had their cousins and the people they went to preschool with. But eventually, I made my friends.
That's not true of everybody, but in Lafayette, some people there, some. I'm not saying all, and I'm not even saying most, but some view Baton Rouge as kind of a rival.
That is true.
They probably thought you were a turncoat to move to Baton Rouge.
I think they did. They will tell you that.
And it's a great city.
On the other hand, though.
But why are we in competition?
I think that the way that some people see LSU outshining UL in some regards, by, you know, according to some people, and just from a money perspective, and, you know, the swamp and the river create a sense of isolation, mm-hmm. and they had that isolation for so long. Up until people started moving in with petroleum.
Yeah, and I'm a person who for many years has done business all around the state, and some in Lafayette view us as kind of the big kid on the block who needs an attitude adjustment. And in New Orleans, there are some who view us as a cow town of sorts.
Well, I will say this. My good friends in Lafayette know that I love me some Topo Chico with a twist of lime, and it is not to be found at this point in Baton Rouge. And in the last week, two people have driven from Lafayette to Baton Rouge to bring me some Topo Chico with a twist of lime. So there are wonderful people.
Lafayette is a wonderful place with wonderful people. And I think on the whole, people from Baton Rouge enjoy visiting there. And you know what? I think people from Lafayette like coming to an LSU football game every now and then, too.
I will say that I don't know that some people, of course, do. But there are a lot of people in Lafayette don't realize all the good things about Baton Rouge. And because they haven't had enough time to explore it, you know, driving through Baton Rouge can be difficult at times, as you well know, if you stay on the interstate. But if you get off the interstate, mm-hmm. there's a whole lot of fun stuff, great places to eat. And I think that, you know, food is one of the things that we cover in features. And so that's been really fun to explore. And I invite Lafayette and folks from other places to come try out all of our new restaurants and old restaurants.
877-217-5757. Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, you're on with Jan Risher, features editor for The Advocate. Hi, Trish.
Good morning, Jan. I met you when you first moved to Lafayette.
You did. You were one of the first people, and I bought a bottle cap pen from you.
Yeah.
And you remember it. That's impressive.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to watch your career take off and flourish and now move on to Baton Rouge. It's just been, 25 years? 23 years?
It's been 21 years now, almost 21 years. Yeah. So, And it's been fun to watch your career, too. You're quite the artist, and I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you, Trish.
Thank you. And I look forward to your comments on the art scene in Baton Rouge, because there's a lot going on there.
For sure. That's been another great thing to learn more about and see all of the creativity in Baton Rouge.
You lived in three countries, you say?
I did.
And they are?
The United States, Slovakia, and Mexico.
And six states?
Six states. Mississippi, Tennessee, Virginia, Nevada, Texas, and Louisiana.
Outside of Louisiana, any particular favorite?
I loved living in Slovakia. I lived over there right after communism had ended.
Yeah.
And I was in the far corner of it, really on the border of Ukraine and Poland. And it was complete magic for me. It was in the mountains, the Carpathian Mountains. Loved that. Mm-hmm. I loved living in Reno, Nevada. I became the city special events director in Reno and planned all
biggest
sorts.
Little city in the
biggest
world?
Little city in the world.
Yeah.
Divorce capital of the world.
Well,
lots of things to say about Reno.
Well, let's bring you back. We've got a few people on. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get to you today, but Jan, I hope we'll be back soon. She is a remarkable talent, and she's gotten immersed in our community as fast as anybody could. And if you read her work, you'll admire what she does here in Baton Rouge, which is now her home. Do want to note that the trial date for Sharon Lewis in New Orleans, the former associate athletic director at LSU, has been set for May 22nd. This trial is expected to last 7 days. She is alleging discrimination in the athletic department. And we do note that podcasts are available at WRKF.org and at TalkLouisiana.org. Signature support for our program comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting and Jerry Lane Chevrolet.